Sawate discipuli and sawate omnes. Welcome again to another episode of Latin in Layman's, where we're going to be just doing a myth. And we're going to do a Roman mythology myth, I thought, this time around, kind of lay homage to the language that I know very well, Latin. If you didn't know, hopefully you did, though. And if not, facepalm. Anyways, with that being said, I will supply all of my links in the show notes where you can go support me. Consider the Ko-fi. I know that I've kind of belabored that in all of my intros from like the past four episodes or more, something like that. But yeah, you know, I'm not trying to guilt trip you into giving me a tip, but consider it. It's like, you know, when you tip the person behind the cash register, when you go to the cafe, or, you know, when somebody makes you flower water at the coffee shop. I don't know. I'm sorry. I won't belabor it. But that is a monetary way to help me out. You can also buy off of Gut Guardian. Use my code, Liam64728. You know, we're always talking about how we need to up our fiber. And I was talking in a video recently about how I don't think that we're really well aware that we need for, I don't know why it's different between men and women, but it's about a couple grams less for women, but we need like 38 grams of fiber. That's what we should be getting daily. That's according to the FDA. And the FDA gets a lot of things wrong, but that seems like a pretty like healthy. That's why everybody is also, we deal with an obesity epidemic, is because nobody's eating fiber. If you think about the concept of orange juice versus oranges, the fruit themselves, is kind of like a protective, it has a protective mechanism, and your body has a protective mechanism. Like, for you to consume the amount of orange juice in like a big gulp thing, and just do that in the equation, or equating it to oranges, actual oranges, you would end up throwing them up, because you would get to a point where your body would not be able to consume the water content, the sugar, the fiber. But see, that's why we can be obese, is because we can overconsume on those kinds of hyper palatable things, because then we also put more sugar into them, which makes it more delicious, because sugar is like the ultimate addictive agent that we are all addicted to. I know that I am. You know that you are. Don't deny it. Sorry, not sorry. I don't know why I always go on these rants about the gut stuff, but I think it's just because I have a lot of passion for it and I deal with that kind of stuff. And it's, you know, consider it, you know, consider if you don't have, like, do a prebiotic, probiotic, postbiotic, now that we're even adding postbiotics now. It's funny. Yeah, I remember when it was just probiotic. But if you think about it, you need that prebiotic, at least for the probiotic to feed off of, because if you don't have any sort of fiber, because prebiotics are fibers, look at me, I'm still going on this. Sorry, not sorry. Because if you need those prebiotics are fibers. If you wanted to get them in the whole food form, you could get them from things like, you know, like less processed forms of oats, which would be steel cut oats, for instance, or even groats would be even a lesser processed form. Because if you didn't know, it's just groats to steel cut oats to old-fashioned oats, they're all just various forms of how processed that oat is. Because you can get all the way to the quick oats that are original, and then the even more processed form is going to be the ones in the packages. And that's also going to be coming with, like, you know, the brown sugar and flavorings and stuff like that. So, you know, there you go. I hope you enjoy being taught this little GI lesson. So you could get prebiotics from those kinds of things. Also, roots, inulin. There's a lot. I'm not going to look them up right now. Made this really long. But that's what probiotics need in order to feed off of. And then that allows the bacteria to proliferate and be inoculated into your small bowel. Because you don't have the bacteria in the colon, you have it in the small bowel where you absorb the nutrients. You do not absorb the nutrients in the colon. The large bowel is storage for waste. There you go. Now, with that being said, with all of that information being given, let's get into our myth. Once upon a time, in a long, long time ago, way off in a faraway land, in the dawn of time, when the world was young and the sun gilded every petal of vibrant gold, a bee named Meloria buzzed with discontent. Her wings, the color of the sunrise, carried her from flower to flower, but her heart felt heavy. The honey they toiled for, a nectar of the gods, if you will, was constantly under threat. Greedy hands, both human and creature alike, raided their meticulously constructed hives, leaving the colony vulnerable. One crisp morning, as Meloria balanced on a dew-kissed lily pad, a golden glow caught her eye. It emanated from a figure perched on a nearby cloud, his beard a cascade of lightning and his eyes like storm clouds. It was Jupiter, king of the gods, disguised as a magnificent golden bee. Intrigued by Meloria's diligent work, he alighted next to her, his true form revealing itself in a burst of celestial light. Meloria, though initially terrified, felt a strange calm wash over her. Jupiter, sensing her fear, spoke in a voice that rumbled like thunder, yet held the warmth of summer. "Little bee," he said, "your dedication is a sight to behold. Tell me, what troubles your industrious heart?" Hesitantly, Meloria poured out all her woes. She spoke of the constant struggle to protect their precious honey, the lifeblood of their hive. Jupiter listened patiently, a crease forming on his brow. He understood the importance of balance. Humans, his own creations, needed the bees. But the bees needed protection too. A promise bloomed on his lips. "Brave Meloria," he declared, "for your honesty and hard work, I grant you a wish. Ask for anything and it shall be yours." Meloria didn't hesitate. Oh, great Jupiter, she buzzed. Grant us a weapon to defend our honey, a way to deter those who would steal it. Jupiter's brow furrowed further. He knew the sting of a scorpion, the venom of a serpent, but neither held the elegance or purpose he envisioned. He looked at Meloria, so small yet so resolute, and a plan sparked in his mind. With a flick of his wrist, a shimmering needle materialized in his hand. It pulsed with a faint light, a powerful paradox of beauty and danger. This, Jupiter declared, shall be your weapon. A sting, sharp and potent, to ward off intruders. But his voice softened. However, this gift comes at a cost. Meloria, filled with hope, eagerly awaited his explanation. But Jupiter's words were a storm cloud. When you use the sting, he said, it will not only pierce your attacker, but it will also pierce you. Your life will be forfeit. A sacrifice for the protection of your hive. Meloria's wings dropped. The joy of a weapon was eclipsed by the weight of the sacrifice. The honey, their lifeblood, would be secured, but at what cost? She envisioned the bustling hive, the queen laying eggs, the young bees learning to fly. A symphony of life that would be silenced with her death. A long silence stretched between them. Finally, Meloria, she lifted her head, her resolve unwavering. I accept, great Jupiter, she declared. Her voice small, but firm. For the good of the hive, I will bear this burden. Jupiter, touched by her selflessness, bestowed upon her not just the sting, but also the ability to choose its use. The sting wouldn't fire unless Meloria truly willed it, a constant reminder of the ultimate price. He then blessed the entire bee population with the same gift and the same burden. So yeah, clearly we have ideological implications of, why bees, forfeit their life when they sting us. So that's just an explanation for, that biological thing that happens within the animal kingdom / bee kingdom / insect kingdom / skibbity bibbity bop. But it's also kind of talking about, balance with nature, because this myth kind of gives us this reminder of a delicate relationship between humans and animals and plants and all these things. Bees are crucial pollinators, and their protection ensures the health of our entire ecosystem, if you really think about it. It kind of warns us that against greed and Well, it warns us against it, rather. Sorry about that. And also about respecting natural order, right? Everything kind of comes at a cost. And there's a cost of protection as well. It's kind of like when you think about, this is another ideological understanding, sacrifice. So the bee kind of embodies that idea of protection that can come at a cost a lot of the time. A lot of, you know, soldiers risk their lives, firefighters, police officers. I mean, it kind of shows that in order to make and or ensure the people that we love are safe, we have to we might have to put ourselves in harm's way. I don't know. I was just thinking about that. That just kind of popped into my head. But it also kind of, at the end of the day, wraps it up with that choice and responsibility and emphasizes that importance of responsibility that comes with power. You know, Uncle Ben said it right, with great power comes great responsibility. And we have to always weigh the pros and cons and the consequences that follow with the actions that we take. Because con means with, coming from the Latin preposition cum, and sequor is an irregular verb. It looks like a deponent verb, but it's not. It just means to follow. So consequences are what follows with the actions we take. So there's a little etymology to wrap it up. Thanks again for being here. Tempus est, scelerae.